Hi, everybody. Thanks for coming out. I really appreciate having an audience. It's great. I'm here today to talk about lymphatic filariasis in conflict areas in eastern Burma. I'm here on behalf of the Karen Department of Health and Welfare, the Backpack Health Worker Team, and Global Health Access Program. The first two organizations I mentioned are community-based health service providers working in eastern Burma. There's a third organization also working in eastern Burma in Shan State that actually asked not to be identified publicly here, but this represents some of their work. And also the Johns Hopkins School of Public Health has supported this work. So before I sort of jump into the data and the description of the program, I'd like to talk about a few just sort of overarching questions that I hope to get at while I'm talking. The first one is talking about displacement and human rights violations and health services in eastern Burma and how those things are connected. A lot of reporting has been done on these things, and I think they're actually very important for appreciating how health outcomes work and how health service can be delivered in this context. The second is very closely related. You know, what is the quality and reliability of available public health information from Burma, given that Burma is a dictatorship, it's a closed country, and it's considered by many to be in that category of failed states. And it raises questions about how reliable and how good the data is coming out of the country. And in areas with active armed conflict, with large internally displaced populations, what are the best strategies for delivering health services? Because borders are very porous, and everyone loves the adage that infectious diseases do not respect borders, what do the answers to these questions, 1, 2, and 3, what do they mean for Burma's neighbors? And particularly, I'll talk about Thailand. And what I hope to accomplish is that to present some new data from community-based lymphatic filariasis programs in conflict areas as an instructive way of answering these questions, to add to other data that's been compiled throughout the years. So going to this first question, which is background and trying to kind of introduce a very complicated situation, and apologies to any Burma politics or Burma history experts in the audience. Presentations like this kind of necessitate short treatments of very complicated issues. I've heard Burma described as the anthropologist's dream country. There's enormous ethnic diversity in the country; more than 110 languages are spoken. The colors up here kind of represent the largest ethnic groups, but again, there's diversity even within those groups. The overriding theme in the history of the country for the last 60 years has been armed conflict between ethnic groups that are seeking autonomy from the central Burmese government and the resulting crackdown from the Burmese government. We know that in eastern Burma alone there are at least 470,000 internally displaced persons. I'll get into the details of those numbers in the next slide, but the other consistent feature is human rights violations that are systematic and are actually kind of outlined and enshrined in government policy and military orders. The two really important ones are the Four Cuts policy and the self-sufficiency policy. The Four Cuts policy is a military order and an overall military strategy that has basically instructed military brigades to cut off the supply of recruits, food, medicine, and money to any of the ethnic separatist groups. And the result of this policy has been widespread targeting of civilians, because civilians are viewed as sort of the support structure and the basis for, where the separatist groups get their troops and supplies and food. The second policy, the self-sufficiency policy, is an order from the central government to troops in conflict areas, instructing them basically that they won't get central support from the government, from the military, and that they should support their own troops and their own operations from the local area around them. And this has led to very just disastrous extractive relationships where government troops are requiring forced labor or basically stealing food supplies or money from the local population. So that's sort of the gist of the background. When I mentioned those 470,000 internally displaced people, we know that about 140,000 of those people are living, like the family depicted here, that they are in hiding sites. So they're in the jungle, they're very mobile, and you can imagine a whole host of ways that this makes people vulnerable to infectious diseases. And there are repeated health and human rights surveys. I'll just mention this one very quickly and won't go into too much detail about it, but it's a large-scale health and human rights survey conducted independently. Large sample size, good area across eastern Burma, and the table's here for your reference, but forced labor, displacement, and destruction of food supplies are widespread in these conflict areas, and they're all associated with increased odds of catastrophic health outcomes amongst internally displaced populations. So now, kind of looking at this question again of the quality and reliability of public health information, this is the most recent data reported to CIRO on the prevalence of lymphatic filariasis and the endemicity of lymphatic filariasis across Burma. And this is just for reference right now. You'll see that in the red areas, they're sort of on the, that southern dangler. That's Karen State. Those are areas of Karen State. It's known to be, lymphatic filariasis is known to be endemic there. The one thing I want to point out is that here in eastern Shan State, where the arrow is pointing, this internationally reported data has these regions of the country as non-endemic, no LF. So now going into the community-based program that was run by the Karen Department of Health and Welfare, the Backpack Health Worker Team, and again that third community-based health group in Shan State that I'm not going to name. They, looking at these data and looking at the situation where they worked, there was lots of anecdotal and lots of observational evidence that lymphatic filariasis was a pretty big problem. And even in Shan State, where there were symptomatic LF infections that people observed, and so, for people who aren't totally familiar with the epidemiology of lymphatic filariasis, the manifest symptomatic cases of lymphatic filariasis are actually a very small portion of the people who are carrying lymphatic filariasis. So people with elephantiasis, seeing one or two people like that in a community is really the tip of an iceberg of, lots and lots of people carrying the infection. And based on what the medics had seen in the community, they were interested in, one, assessing the prevalence of this disease, reporting some independent, rigorous information on the prevalence in these areas, and to do something about it, to mount a response and to start administering mass drug administration, so prophylactic treatments for LF that, if done over time, can help eliminate the disease. And I'll talk about that a little bit later. So switching to kind of a chronological description of how this worked, the first part was training and survey methods for how to map LF in terms of its prevalence, how to do repeated surveillance, talking about morbidity control, which is really a cornerstone, a key point of any LF program, is to help people who are already living with symptomatic LF infection sort of halt the progress of their disease and live productive lives and deal with the disability. And then we also talked about mass drug administration. The picture there is one of the medics working on the program learning how to fill out the data forms that we use in the program. The next step was a key informant survey in seven target areas, looking at lymphedema and hydrocele. Hydrocele is another manifestation of LF where the scrotum becomes enlarged because of lymphatic blockage. This was done in six village tracts in Karen State and one internally displaced persons camp in eastern Shan State. This is a photo from the field. Again, that sort of observational anecdotal evidence that led people to start this. This is, again, that tip of the iceberg. There are lots of cases, a few cases of known elephantiasis, a few cases of known hydrocele, indicating that, infection is highly endemic in these areas. And that's something that they would go on to confirm with 100-person convenience sample surveys using rapid CAR tests, which tests for the circulating filarial antigen. And this was done in all seven areas, 100 people. This is just sort of a short sampling. Again, this is a convenience sample. This isn't a rigorous prevalence survey, but it lets you know that this is the number of people who have, the percentage of people in this convenience sample who've been exposed to LF in their lifetimes. And so you look at, 70% as exposure to LF. That's definitely a red flag for definitely high exposure and high endemicity in these areas. What happened next was a 239-person universal testing in the IDB camp in Shan State that I mentioned. And as you can see, not everybody is excited about getting tested for LF. And the one thing that's really important to know about this population in the IDB camp is that these are people who were recently displaced from their homes and people who had all denied any history of travel outside of southern Shan State. So this is a population from Shan State, a sample that had moved from this area that I showed you on the Ciro map earlier. And after that, after seeing the mapping results and the key informant surveys for the symptomatic infections, surveyors were trained to do a 600-person survey, which is very closely in line with how the World Health Organization recommends for doing routine surveillance in lymphatic filariasis elimination programs. In the picture here, you can see people being trained on a method to do random house, like interval sampling, to get a random sample of households in each village. Do the training with candy, and it's fun. It's very kind of programmatic, like very repetitive how we do the training, but it works really well. And again, you know, part of this was of course having treatment available for people who tested positive, so that you know, if they did show up on the CAR test, they could get you know, prompt treatment right away from the same person doing the survey. And these are the results of the survey. So importantly, in that IDP camp, 4.6% of the population was positive for LF antigen. In the overall sample of 865 people in Karen State, 40% of the people were positive. And I think the key points in this is that it's, you know, LF is very, very endemic in Karen State. And the big one is that in Shan State, LF is endemic, and this, you know, directly contradicts internationally reported data that we're getting from the government. So, you know, knowing that the burden of LF is huge in these communities and in these conflict areas, it raises the question of how do you intervene? How do you deliver mass drug administration, and how do you control LF in communities like this? And, you know, this is just one example that highlights the fact that international humanitarian aid agencies are really prevented from reaching displaced populations in eastern Burma. They have really no access. And it's not their fault. It's because the humanitarian space in the country has been constrained really tightly. This is a nice quote from the former director of MSF France in Burma, basically describing the barriers that they'd run into trying to deliver health services in these conflict areas. And I think the answer to this question is really community-based health workers who are embedded, who come from these conflict-affected communities, you know, like this gentleman here who's testing this little kid for malaria. Again, nobody likes to get stuck with a needle, but it's our belief, and I think the belief of the community health organizations and, you know, GAP that's providing technical support, that this is the way to do it. These groups have established their own health services, autonomous from the government. They're reaching nearly 400,000 people at really high quality. If anybody's interested in learning more about the performance of these programs, it's been demonstrated and described in a lot of other papers that I'm happy to talk about. You know, following the survey, these same groups started mass drug administration in the same areas. The target population for this work is up to about 16,000 people. There are, of course, challenges for the groups delivering services in conflict areas. Particularly, I don't know why they're all number one. They should be 1 through 4, but they're all important, I guess, is what I'm trying to say. Displacement and mobility in the populations. You know, mass drug administration is typically done in predetermined implementation units that, you know, ostensibly have static populations rather than a displaced population that's subject to all the, you know, things that can change during conflict. The big thing is that, you know, these programs are operating without support from national programs and without international partners like the Global Program to Eliminate Lymphatic Filariasis, because they can't be working with the government, because the government is, in a lot of ways, the source of the problem. This is more sort of background stuff about the quality of health information coming out of Burma. And, you know, I'll leave it up to everybody to kind of check out this TB data that's just one example of a big pattern of inconsistencies that reveal major gaps in how public health information is reported. The last question I want to talk about is, you know, these answers, what do they mean for Burma's neighbors and the international community? And this is a picture of Chiang Mai, Thailand, at nighttime. I picked nighttime because the mosquitoes that transmit LF bite you during the night. And this was a paper from a few years ago that demonstrated that there is a capable mosquito vector that can transmit LF that's very widespread in Thai cities. It's Culex quinca fasciatus. And failure to control LF in Burma, you know, given the number of migrant workers who come into Thailand, given how porous the border is, it really threatens to reverse some hard-won achievements in Thailand that's put in 20 years doing mass drug administration, controlling LF, has it almost down to, you know, zero infections. And that progress and all those achievements are really sort of threatened by public health negligence in Burma. So the summary, very quickly, armed conflict, forced displacement, human rights violations drive high rates of death and disability. That's the background. LF is endemic in Kurin State and Shan State. Confirmed LF infections in eastern Shan State directly contradict internationally reported statistics from the government of Myanmar. And this is in keeping with a wider pattern of inconsistencies. Local community-based health groups are critical for reaching conflict-displaced populations in eastern Burma. And again, like I just said, high LF endemicity and the failure for public health and LF control programs to reach displaced populations really threatens a lot of success that's already been made in Thailand. So thank you very much. I hope I'm on time.